From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at California politics for this week ending April 17th. This was tax week.
Uh-oh, I got to go.
You got troubles?
Yeah, I got a letter to mail.
I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony York, tax scofflaw.
I'm just kidding.
Editor of Capital Weekly.
I don't pay taxes.
You don't pay taxes.
You have to make money to pay taxes.
Are you the guy that's the problem with state revenues then by not paying taxes?
The guy.
The guy.
That's me.
The one and only.
I am the problem.
So obviously we've got a few things to talk about that happened this week. Really kind of mostly campaign-ish kind of things.
Yes.
The budget ballot campaign, and then another campaign thing, and then more stuff.
Yes.
How's that for a great preview?
Scintillating.
Today on the podcast, stuff, and campaign stuff.
And more stuff.
So let's talk about the budget campaign, which is now only 5 weeks away, something like that. It's getting pretty darn close, and we're ever so slowly starting to see who's on what side and how this will play out. But I still think, and you're going to tell us what happened, I still think, and I know you would agree, a shoe could drop, a big shoe could drop. Money could really get dumped into a no campaign on some of these ballot measures in particular.
Yep.
That could change the dynamic. But talk about who kind of showed their cards this week.
Well, this week we saw the Service Employees Union and the California Faculty Association open a new no on Prop 1A committee. Prop 1A is sort of arguably the centerpiece of this special election campaign.
It's the long-term systemic change to the budget process.
Spending cap slash limit slash
spending constraint is actually what I've started calling it for reasons I'll tell it next week. I've been writing a Prop 1A piece that'll air on Monday.
I just got a vision of a white jacket suddenly.
Yeah. But I started calling it a spending constraint. Again, we'll talk about that another time because I think cap and limit are somewhat misleading based on what it does. But so this is a campaign of organized labor. Really.
Yeah. And then so this is, you know, this measure is opposed for very different reasons from the left and the right. And you know, on the right, we've had the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, Steve Poizner and Meg Whitman, Republican candidates for governor, talking a lot about their opposition to Prop 1A. No money has really materialized from Whitman or Poizner, people of serious means, which we've discussed before. But labor has now formed a committee and made a little down payment. Was there about $300,000 in this committee so far? But I think, you know, really the game of chicken continues. I mean, we're still waiting for the shoe. I mean, now we can say, keeping with this analogy, maybe we got a sock on, but we're still waiting for the shoe.
And, you know, and I mean, I think it will be interesting. I mean, it's impossible to say that there's a total deadline. You can't say that, oh, if there's not money on a no campaign for this by, you know, whatever date, you know, it's not going to influence things. If there's enough money, you could get an ad, a campaign up quickly, something, right, on television somehow to make a difference. But as more and more time goes on, it seems like, and notwithstanding the group that put themselves out there this week, but as more and more time goes on, it's the Schwarzenegger-led alliance for yes and versus the reticence of voters over a deal that seems not terribly attractive.
Right. And the fundamental strategy of the yes campaign, I think, is contingent upon neutralizing the no side. If there's a no campaign, I think we all agree these measures are in big, big trouble. These are very easy to defeat, given the skepticism voters have already demonstrated towards these measures, and that they do have their only chance of passage is that there is no sustained campaign against these measures and that the yes side comes together, much like we saw on the bond measure back in 2004, Prop 57 and 58, where you have a bipartisan coalition coming together with no funded no campaign. And so that would allow a ballot measure, a series of ballot measures, which are very complex, to gain some trust in the eyes of voters. I mean, if you got a Dianne Feinstein, say.
Well, I was going to say the bipartisan nature of the yes on the budget burrito.
The burrito.
But the bipartisan nature of that yes on 1A through 1F campaign got pumped up a little this week when Jerry Brown, the attorney general, likely gubernatorial candidate in 2010.
Right.
Brown threw his support behind 1A and did a big event in the Bay Area with the governor in midweek.
But he's not the transitional figure that you would need. I think if that figure exists,
you're basically making the point that it has to be right. It has to be the person who's seen above the political fray,
right?
Which really is only Dianne Feinstein. If you look at the polls among politicians,
yeah, I think that's right. And not saying that Dianne Feinstein is needed to save this campaign, but she couldn't hurt,
right?
She couldn't hurt, and I don't think that's lost on people who are involved in this campaign.
Well, and it was interesting, you know, Brown. The word leaked out at the beginning of the week that Brown was going to endorse 1A and then, you know, did his event and talked about that it was a sensible measure, but had also said some comments to reporters before where he said, I certainly wouldn't raise taxes if I was governor. And, of course, 1A is tied to a large $13 to $16 billion tax increase. By the way, the Ledge Analyst Office thinks the tax increase is worth less now because of the way the economy has deteriorated, but it's another story. So, you know, Brown has certainly played both sides of that tax debate in the last couple of weeks, which, again, I think shows the complexity in how any elected official puts their position out here. Because because this 1A and 1B, C, D, E, and F, they're so complicated. There's so many moving parts. There's so many things that people can pick apart. If they don't like the spending constraint, then they don't like the tax increase. Or maybe they're okay with the tax increase, then they don't like the big $9 billion payment for schools under 1B. Or if they're okay with that, then they don't like the lottery borrowing over 1C. I mean, I would just think if you're the people trying to get these measures passed, it's a multi-front battle.
Well, and I think the strategy is to keep the voters at 35,000 feet rather than focusing in on the details.
And don't pay attention over here to the details.
Stay up here and keep your head up against the window and look, they're big squares. Those aren't.
Look at the clouds go by. Don't look at that fire down there.
Hold on. Also, I think since we spoke last, another potential gubernatorial candidate, Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, also came out in support of all the measures. I know 1A, I think all of them, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, that pretty much puts everybody on record, at least with 1A. Newsom has said he supports 1A, though he hasn't done an event with Schwarzenegger like Villaraigosa and Brown have done.
Right.
And then, of course, we know where the Republicans are. Two of them oppose. Tom Campbell, the kind of dark horse candidate, but, you know, a longtime guy in California politics, is in support
of 1A. Right.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, and again, never say never about it being too late. But, you know, at a certain point, it would be practically too late to put money behind a no measure. I also think what's interesting really quickly is if you look at the events the governor did this week for the budget burrito.
Mm-hmm.
I will drop that at some point. I'll stop saying
May
it.
May 20th.
Clearly no one else is picking up on it. But if you look at the events the governor did, while as much as they are staying at 30,000 feet, he is tackling head on the tax increase.
Right.
He's cognizant that the tax increase is something that has got a lot of people angry. We saw Tea Party parties. Nice,
party,
John.
Party.
Thank you. Anthony. Is that like Tony Tone?
I've done it again.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
You've stopped the entire train of thought of the podcast. But if you look at those kind of things, like the one we had at the Capitol, I mean, taxes is a huge issue. And so I think the governor is cognizant of that and is attacking that by saying, you know, we had to do it. What are you going to do? You couldn't cut enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So while it's macro, it's not too macro to ignore that tax argument, which I think is probably the most lethal argument.
It
of
is
all
an,
of them.
A knee-jerk emotional argument.
People have to think through the rest of it. And that's not to say they wouldn't care about the programs that could be cut under the spending constraint or things like that. But the tax is really right.
Well, and the opposition, I think the opposition that we saw from Labor this week is more of the macro, big picture, 35,000 foot type of opposition that 10 years from now, 2014, when the budget recovers, that's when we'll feel the pain of a spending restraint if you are a labor group who's dependent on the state budget for your funding. But, you know, just as we see the governor focusing on the burrito approach, we see groups like the service employees, who we mentioned earlier, really beginning to take the a la carte approach. I mean, they came out against 1A and opened up a campaign committee, but they've also officially supported Prop 1C, the lottery borrowing. You know, whether or not they will give money to 1C remains to be seen. But, you know, I wrote a little bit about that in Capital Weekly, www.capitalweekly.net.
Thank you.
I think it just shows how how fractured a lot of these coalitions are. I mean, you go to California Budget Reform Now, the official website of the Yes on A through F campaign, and you look at the list of quote unquote endorsers, and you see some have only endorsed two, some have endorsed, you know, this one but not the other. It's very telling just looking at that website. It kind of tells the whole story of this campaign.
And another great example of that quickly was the first TV ad that was launched this week, which was launched by the California Teachers Association. A yes on 1A and 1B, and 1B I've alluded to here is the $9 billion supplemental payment for public schools over the next few years if it's passed. The CTA has officially endorsed all six, but their television campaign is about two, 1A and 1B, and it has to be about 1A a little bit because we know if 1A fails, 1B fails. CTA is obviously most interested in that money for schools, 1B, but they've got to get 1A passed over the finish line. So you look at the television ad, it's all about 1A and 1B, and it very quickly just touches on 1A. It basically just says, you know, bring some controls to state spending. But meanwhile, look at all this stuff about schools.
Right.
And so it is a very clear sign of what you're talking about, of this, you know, focus on what you've got to focus on. And so I think it'll be really interesting. We haven't seen any new polling for a while, but it'll be interesting to see, are we going to see some splits in numbers of 1A through 1F, especially if it becomes this a la carte approach?
Yeah, and what does that mean for the state budget this summer? I mean, what are the short and long-term effects of this? If voters begin to take the a la carte approach, what does it do? And does it endanger the entire burrito?
An endangered burrito.
The endangered burrito.
Stay tuned. So let's switch gears and talk about a different political development this week that's nothing to do with the state budget, but it is fascinating. And that is that you and your skinny – that's not referring to you, I guess.
It's, no, clearly
oh,
not.
Oh, sorry. But that's in your skinny section of Capital Weekly. Is that where it was?
It's our little gossip
section. Is it your little gossip section?
This is a big
piece of gossip. And this is big John Garamendi, Lieutenant Governor, announced candidate for governor in 2010. Mm-hmm. Not only has been calling people about whether he should run for Congress in an open congressional seat, but you seem to think he's made up his mind.
The writers of the skinny, whoever they may be.
The writers of the skinny. Is that like Big Daddy in the back of the newspaper?
No, that's a totally different situation. But yes, what we are hearing is that Lieutenant Governor Garamendi will choose the state Democratic Party convention as his forum to announce his candidacy for Congress.
In another weekend's time.
Yeah. That's the word on the street.
This is the district, we should say really quickly. It was represented by Ellen Talcher, who was just tapped by President Obama to be a high-ranking State Department official under Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And so Talcher has taken that job. So
Contra Costa County area.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Round Bay Area, but up through part of the Valley Delta area, and touches ever so gently on the home of John Garamendi up in Walnut Grove in the Delta area. So,
right. And so he lives in the far far end of the district.
He represents the whole state currently.
He does, right. I caught myself there. But you know, John Garamendi has very high name ID. Mark DeSaulnier has already locked up a lot of big endorsements, including
state senator from the same area.
Right. Has locked up endorsements from Ellen Tauscher.
George Miller.
From George Miller. And a lot of the Democratic establishment seems to be lining up behind DeSaulnier. Assemblywoman Joan Buchanan from Contra Costa,
freshman,
is also considering the run. And it's interesting to what Garamendi's entrance does to the entire dynamic of the race. Again, it would be a low turnout election when it is called and when it happens. And is Buchanan helped because there's another male in the race? Does this hurt DeSaulnier more than it hurts Buchanan, or is this Garamendi's race to lose?
Well, a couple of interesting things. Clearly, his name ID has got to be very high. He's been a fixture in California politics for, you know, going on 25, 30 years, depending on what part of his long resume you're looking at. So name ID has got to be relatively high, being lieutenant governor of the state. Also, you've got to wonder, I mean, you know, we haven't said this, but I think most people know that the polls have shown Garamendi very much out of the Democratic race for governor.
Right.
You've got Brown, Newsom, Villaraigosa possibly, Feinstein possibly. You've got a lot of people in there. It's hard to raise money and get your foot, your niche.
George Marcian.
Yeah, the guy, the Guess Jeans founder who says he's going to run, which we will have to talk about some other time. And, you know, the
Do we really
campaign.
Have to?
No. Okay. Can you guess how that it's going to turn out? Sorry. But so anyway, so Garamendi, real uphill battle in the race for governor. Not surprising that he might want to look for something else. Congressional seats don't open that often, especially in really solid districts like that. But yeah, it's going to be a fascinating race if he jumps in that, given his tenure and, as you said, DeSaulnier's early running of the table of endorsements and a startup like Buchanan, who's been looking at it too. You wonder if it could free some people out because, I mean, DeSaulnier just was elected to the state Senate.
Right.
He's got another whole term he could run for there. Right. Buchanan's got two more terms she could run for in the assembly. So, I mean, these aren't people who, if they lose, will be out of a job.
Well, and Democrats really do not want Joan Buchanan to run for that seat because the fear is, you know, Joan Buchanan narrowly won her race in a very good Democratic
Opens
year.
It up.
And the fear is if that seat is open in a special election, the Republicans will take it. So Buchanan is getting all sorts of pressure from labor groups who helped fund her campaign, from the speaker and from the speaker's political operatives who are encouraging her, to put it lightly, to stay put.
So let's play a quick 60-second parlor game on this, and we'll move to topic three.
Okay.
Let's say, for sake of argument, Garamendi runs and wins. Arnold Schwarzenegger gets to appoint a lieutenant governor to fill out the remainder of Garamendi's term. Who could that be? Oh, sorry. Let me turn off my phone.
Wow. Podcast etiquette.
Hang on a second. So let's start that part again.
Right.
Yeah. So gets to appoint it's someone to fill out Garamendi's term. Who might that be?
Well, and remember, either house has 90 days to vote down that appointee.
Hmm.
So remember, there are a lot of people in the state Senate. I think there are three, at least, who want to be lieutenant governor. Jeff Denham, a Republican state senator, Dean Flores, a Democrat, and Alan Lowenthal, a Democrat, are all running for lieutenant governor. Either house can reject the governor's appointee. What about Fabian Nunez?
Well, that would be an interesting choice.
What about it?
Okay. I don't have any intel for what I'm about to say.
Okay,
right. So we're, disclaimer, we're playing parlor game. First name that came to mind for me of a Republican, Abel Maldonado.
Yeah, but could he get through? I mean, really, you know, if you're—
You don't think he could get through the legislative endorsement that has to happen or confirmation?
I mean, if you're Dean Flores, do you really want to vote? I mean, he would need every Democrat. Plus,
he would need those. Yeah, is it a 2/3 or a majority vote in each house for confirmation?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. It might be a majority. It might be a majority.
Not having lived through this myself in California,
but there would be some serious pressure from Flores, and you know, to.
Well, it was a name that popped out in the parlor game folks. This is full disclaimer.
Name,
we're just talking here.
The name crossed my mind. Another possibility. What about Mike Vallines?
What about Dave Cogdill?
Hey, we could. You know,
what about
the list goes on. What about Maria Shriver?
What about Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Could he appoint himself?
Appoint himself? Because then he'd get another term.
As lieutenant? Well, he would have to run again. He could run. I don't think that would happen.
Stay tuned, folks.
But then who would be governor? Oh, I see. I see you working.
Oh, yeah. So he'd appoint himself as lieutenant governor, which would create a vacancy, which then maybe it would flip over his time as governor and he could run again.
Somebody call Ledge Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard it here first. Write this down. End of April 2009, we have figured out the greatest shell game in California politics.
And let me tell you how the Senate can pass a budget with 26 votes.
All right. Stay tuned. All of those scenarios may come up in a future podcast. All right. Let's talk briefly, and then we're going to wrap this podcast up about Anthony's exciting power list in this week's Capital Weekly. What do you call it? The Capital Weekly 100? The CW 100?
The 100, yes.
Is the CW kind of like that network that went away? Like
no,
UPN
I think the CW is still there. It was UPN and the
WB. Is there
WB.
A trademark, though, when you call it the CW 100 that you've got to?
I don't know. Well, we put Buffy the Vampire Slayer on there.
Okay.
So.
All right, so let's talk about your 100. Folks, you can see it at capitalweekly.net or the newspaper. We're not going to read all 100 here. But I asked Anthony to tell us who the top five are quickly, and then maybe a few others worth mentioning, or any way you want to do it.
Well, let's start at five. Number five, we have Eli Broad, the gazillionaire from Los Angeles, big-time power broker.
Philanthropist, does a lot of other things, too.
Yes, and involved in education policy. Mm-hmm. Maria Shriver needs no introduction, so we'll go to number three.
Wait a minute. So Maria Shriver's number four.
Yes.
And Broad was five.
Yes.
Okay. Number three.
It was Donald Bren, chairman of the Irvine Company, a large, major Republican player, big donor. Another big donor, Jerry Parenchio, former head of Univision, was number two.
Gave a lot of money to the budget burrito campaign.
Yes.
The budget reform.
$1.5 million for a burrito.
As a matter of fact, his name is now on all the taglines
because
of that. Anyway.
And number one.
Number one. Wait, stop, pause.
Drum roll.
Drum roll. I should have added that in. Number one.
Susan Kennedy.
Governor's chief of staff.
Yes. That was the...
Hard to ignore that as the person with the real juice in California politics, right?
Yes. She was the consensus.
You know, you don't hear a lot about Susan Kennedy in the press because I think she's very low-key. In terms of reporters, I mean, she doesn't sit and talk around. She doesn't sit and do interviews with reporters.
Low key. I don't know if that's a word.
But hear me out. Low key in terms of public profile.
Okay.
She doesn't sit around and do interviews with reporters.
Granted.
But I was going to say, everyone in and around California politics in the Capitol knows she is watching and talking and dealing in lots of areas at once.
Yeah, and she's very smart, very capable, and. Has done this before. I mean, she was the cabinet secretary for Governor Gray Davis, and not on many Republicans' Christmas
card list. Cabinet secretary, deputy chief of staff.
I think both.
We'll get a call.
I think both. Be wrong.
Any other notables on the list, really quickly? Anybody else that's worth noting?
It was interesting.
Either going up or coming down.
Interesting. Cracking our top 10 was Mary Nichols, the chair of the California Air Resources Board, arguably the most powerful regulator in the state.
We talked about her last week. Yeah,
a lot of labor folks in the top 20, including Joe Nunez of the California Teachers Association, Courtney Pugh of the Service Employees, a lot of some business folks, Alan Zarenberg of the Chamber of Commerce.
You have staffers on there as well?
We have a couple of staffers in the top. We did one through 50 this week. Mm-hmm. We'll do 51 through 100 next week. You'll see more staffers on the bottom half there. You know, of course, if we had any marketing sense, which we don't, we would have done 51 through 100 this week. And don't get me started.
Did I not make the list?
Yes.
Yes, I did not make the list.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. That was very good. Yeah. Did any journalists make the list?
We have a columnist.
Controversial? No, not a controversial columnist. Sorry, but, you know, the fact that you put a reporter on the list or a journalist.
No, we put George Skelton of the LA Times. Still the dean of the Capitol Press Corps. Still a must read.
Venerable columnist, yes.
Yes. You know, what's interesting about this is even if you wanted to put a TV reporter on the list, you couldn't. I mean, who is – and it shows how little coverage state government gets on television. Well, so.
Of course, our friend Kevin Riggs at KCRA now will give you a hard time.
No,
but anyway.
Kevin is – you know, if you were going to put one, it would be Kevin. But outside of Sacramento,
I mean, there aren't many of us left. In the press world covering the Capitol. But so you got 1 through 50 this week, 51 through 100, also known as the runners-up.
No.
Next week. Well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have some radio folks. John and Ken made the list.
Ah, well, you know. Heads on stakes for them.
Yes.
So read about that in Capitol Weekly this week and next week. And who knows? Next week we'll be still waiting for the big shoe to drop, if it ever drops in the budget campaign. So there you go.
Yes.
There's a preview, or there's a stay tuned.
It is afoot.
And with that, nice.
Yeah.
Nice turn of phrase. That's Anthony York from Capitol Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.